Well, welcome to Rebel Storytellers podcast episode number 5. My name is Brad.
My name is Steve.
Rebel Storytellers is a community of thinkers, writers, motivators, and thought leaders. Are you a thought leader?
I'm a thought entrepreneur.
Thought entrepreneur and performers devoted to sparking hope and action through the world through a daily blog, this podcast, and live events in Cincinnati and eventually London, let's say.
Yeah?
Maybe.
Really?
I hope.
Each weekday in December, 23 different storytellers are sharing 23 different perspectives of the word gift through art, music, poetry, fiction, and essays on rebelstorytellers.com. We actually just started this week with the four-letter word gift. Last month, it was home. And you can check out all 21 posts from home as well on rebelstorytellers.com. So follow along, check that out, and we hope you are joining us for that ride.
So this podcast, we're going to reflect back on some stories from the home series and then jump into the gift. But before we launch in, how was your weekend?
My weekend was good. I don't know if you noticed, but it was Thanksgiving.
I did.
This past weekend, and so had the family. My highlight from our family Thanksgiving was we played Cards Against Humanity.
Yeah.
That's together.
That's a dirty game.
It is. As a family, especially when you play it with your family members.
Wowzer.
And so it was something. If you don't know what that is, don't ever buy it.
Don't. Yeah.
But it's a lot of fun. And your weekend?
It was great. Got together with my mom's side of the family, the Shaw clan, and we had the traditional 3 different types of turkey.
Wow. How many types of turkey are there?
Well, I don't know. Across
3.
The world, but
yes.
We do it. We fry one,
yeah.
We roast one, and we smoke one.
What's your favorite kind?
Smoked by far. I actually don't even eat the other two.
Really?
Turkeys, man, I'm just not into it.
So you don't like turkey?
I think it's fine. It's like the, if Kleenex were food, it'd be turkey.
That makes no sense. Turkey is delicious in every way. We actually had fried turkey for the first time this year, and I thought it was really good.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to start off today's podcast chatting with Darren Ballman. He's a photographer and a wine expert, and he went on an amazing trip across France and Italy.
Yeah, I think all over Europe.
He's going to read a little bit from his post, and then we chat after.
Christian Bonfi has spent over 30 years tending the vineyards that he inherited and purchased. He's a very relaxed, soft-spoken man who struggles with his English. When I arrived, something seemed different as I exited my car and Christian walked out of the cellar to meet me. He was able to explain that his father had just passed away and today was the wake and funeral. There wasn't going to be any harvesting that day on the estate. Christian repeatedly apologized that he wouldn't be able to spend time with me, and I repeatedly assured him that I completely understood. Adding to the complexity was the plan for me to stay in their estate guest house that evening. Christian insisted that was fine and also set me up in the office area where I had access to Wi-Fi so I could work. The property was a small place, and through the office window I had a view of the dirt parking lot, Christian and Kathy's home to the right, and his mother and father's home to the left. Throughout the day, I had a front row seat to the coming and going of their friends and family members. Christian mentioned that we might be able to have a glass of wine together later that evening, after the family dinner at his mother and father's house. I insisted he didn't need to worry about that. Complicating things for the family was his father's death coinciding with harvest time. When the grapes are ready, they're ready. The workload around harvest time is tremendous. The preparation, the harvesting itself, and all of the work in the cellar to get the newly fermenting wines on the proper path often means days of very little sleep. Harvest doesn't wait for anything. It just happens. Whatever comes along in life during harvest becomes part of it. They harvested their first grapes, so there was work to do in the cellar the morning I arrived. For a couple of hours, I was able to capture a few photos of Christian working the tanks in the cellar with the newly pressed juice from the Viognier grapes, and then helping two ladies from the village choose wines they wanted to purchase. I was constantly aware of how life goes on during a difficult day. Before long, all work in the cellar ceased. People were arriving at the estate and going into his parents' home. Christian retreated to his home, and a little while later, walked out in a dark suit, climbed into his car, and drove to the church. Things became eerily quiet, and I found myself the keeper of the inn, letting both British and French tourists know there were no tastings available that day. Later in the day, the activity level picked up as family and friends came back to Christian's parents' home to spend time together. Sure enough, around 7 p.m., Christian came into the office and went to the refrigerator. He grabbed a few bottles of chilled rosé and white Sablé wine, looked at me, and said, "Come, it's time for wine." I followed him, assuming the two of us might sit down for a glass and chat for a bit. He led me to his parents' home and up the stairs to the outside patio. At first, I thought he just needed to grab a couple glasses, but then I realized he was having me sit with the remaining members of his immediate family. He sensed my hesitation. I insisted I didn't need to be there. He insisted that I did. I found myself in the middle of the remaining dozen members of the family, including his mother, grandmother, and sisters. Very little English was spoken, but a couple of family members engaged me in conversation and asked lots of questions about my life. The table was full of conversation, joking, laughing, and quite a few empty bottles of wine. I also learned fairly quickly that they were still yet to have the family dinner. They directed me to my seat at the table. The discomfort I felt at first quickly faded, morphing into a real comfort surrounded by a family together in a house that held decades of memories for them. It was a diverse cast of characters and emotions. Mostly the evening was filled with stories and jokes, but looks of heartbreak and exhaustion made the occasional appearance, especially on the faces of Christian and his mother. I brought the camera along to his mother and father's home. Hesitant at first, it probably became the best decision of the day as I captured their togetherness, laughter, and loss. What started as a day that felt like a disaster, as I questioned what in the world I was doing there, turned instead into an amazing experience that I will always remember and cherish.
His was definitely one of my favorites, and there's just something about using the photography with the storytelling that just creates this picture. I don't know how to describe it. I was just hooked on his post the minute I started reading it, and it was just a really, really cool picture of that experience.
Yeah, I didn't mention this in when we were talking to Darren, but I was actually inspired by this post, and so I invited Darren to our family's Thanksgiving this year, and wow, he came and he did a wine tasting, did the one Gigandas from the post that he just talked about, as well as he just took photos of the family, and it was a great experience having him around.
That's weird. I don't. Did you invite me to your Thanksgiving?
Did you not get the email?
No, I didn't.
Did you check it?
Yeah, I feel like I check my email a lot.
Maybe it went to your spam folder.
That's too bad. Now, one of my other favorite posts, yeah, and I'm not just saying this about everybody's, but was from Natalie Shaw, who wrote a memoir about something that happened to her growing up that I just thought was incredible. And so we thought we'd have her read her post as well.
On a hot August evening in 2008, I got into my car and pulled out of our driveway. I ran into my dad on his way back from a dinner on my way out. He rolled down his window, so I rolled down mine. "Hey, cutie, where are you headed?" he asked, happy as I'd ever seen him. "To see the Dark Knight again," I said, rolling my eyes. "I should be back sometime around 1 a.m. He smiled. "All right, have fun. I'll see you soon." I drove out to West Omaha and sat through the three-hour movie for the second time because it was my friend's last night in town. Some other friends of ours snuck in whiskey and cokes and probably ruined the movie for the rest of the theater, yelling at the screen and throwing popcorn at strangers. I drove home hours later, tired and annoyed at my friend's behavior, and went straight to bed. A small part of me registered that my dad's car wasn't in the garage, but I didn't think anything of it. It was past midnight on a weekday. How did I not think anything of it? "Nat," my brother's voice broke into my dreams around 2 a.m. "What?" I managed, remembering a time when he woke me up because of a noise downstairs and we tiptoed down, barely breathing, heart thumping audibly, only to find a pair of shoes rattling around in the dryer. Dad's car is gone, he said. So, where do you think he is? Joe, I'm sure it's fine. Go back to sleep. I wonder if my brother was able to go back to sleep as easily as I was. If he sat awake in his bed for hours, waiting for the flash of headlights to move across his wall, for the sound of the garage door opening, anything to reassure him that everything was, in fact, fine. I didn't work the next day, a rarity for me that summer, so I had scheduled my car for a much-needed checkup. I yelled bye to my mom and skipped down the stairs to the garage, where I ran into my dad, in a suit, just coming home. Hey, I said, just getting home? Halfway through the sentence, I realized I was confused. The end of it faltered. He didn't tell me there. He pulled me into the formal living room, the one we only use on holidays. The one where he chatted with important people who were over for dinner, where he once had to break the news to a good friend and coworker that they were letting him go. I don't want you to hate me, he started. It felt like someone had cracked a cold bottle of liquid over my head, the ice trickling into my veins. The night before, after running into me in the driveway and parking his car in the garage, my dad walked into our house. He sat down on the couch with my mom, and they started to watch a DVR'd episode of ER. I don't know if he waited for a commercial break or if there was a particularly dramatic moment that triggered him. A surgery gone wrong, an especially gruesome car accident victim. What I do know is that at some point my father turned to my mother and said simply, I'm in love with another woman, like he was commenting on the weather. Oh, and I heard it might hail later tonight. We were raised to be quiet children. We didn't cry on planes. We didn't fight on road trips. If we got cranky, if Joe crossed into Ryan's space, or if one of them said something mean to me, one look from my dad was all it took. Ryan and Joe have always been better at silence than me. Maybe it's a Y chromosome thing. Maybe it's deeper than genetics. They can have entire conversations across the dinner table that no one notices but me. It's like a language that I understand, but I can't speak. Sometimes when I voice my thoughts out loud, I can feel their frustration, and there is an audible effort behind their short answers. Maybe if there had been one more of us, or one less, I would have had a language too. Instead, I spent my whole life figuring out theirs instead of making up my own. I spent most of the day that he told me in my room, with the pink wallpaper and horse posters that hadn't changed since elementary school. Eventually, Joe came in and sat at the end of my bed. Ryan appeared in the doorway, not all the way in, but not all the way out. I couldn't remember the last time they'd both been in my room. It was there, with the late August sun coming through my window and the cat purring in my lap, that my brothers and I learned to speak. The day after he moved out, we sat in his empty office, silently marveling at the things he took and the things he left behind. On the shelves above his desk were pictures of their wedding. That one was obvious. Next to it was a picture of Ryan in the first grade, his front tooth missing from his wide smile. That one was harder. The electric piano remained, as did the couch he slept on his last night at home. On the couch was a pillow Joe got him for Father's Day that read, "A son always looks up to his father," meant to be a joke as Joe stood 3 inches taller than my dad. In the corner by the window was the globe I loved to play with when I was younger. I would take the globe off the shelf and spin it to see where my finger would land. I would run my fingers over the mountain ranges, raised like scars across the Earth's surface. I never spoke first because I knew his office was a quiet place, but sometimes he did, pointing out Yugoslavia and telling me it didn't exist anymore, asking if I could find where we lived. He left only one book behind, a big blue book with black and white pictures simply titled Dog Book. My brothers and I used to go through the breeds, arguing over which was the best one. We memorized the page of our dog, a Gordon Setter, and were glad to see it looked exactly like Jake. A bell tinkled from underneath the desk. Sadie, our fat orange cat who hadn't shown an ounce of excess energy in years, batted an old toy out into the middle of the room. She chased it across the floor like a kitten, caught it and stood on her hind legs, batting it in the air between her paws, her blubbery extra skin flopping wildly. We watched her for a while before Joe started to laugh, and then we all laughed until we couldn't breathe. We laughed until we cried.
You know, what was interesting in recording that post with Natalie is that I had read it a handful of times, and even on the second or third time of recording it, like, there were just certain parts that still just gave me chills, and the way that she writes, I think, is just so vivid and descriptive that it was like you were there in that office with her.
Natalie's one that just, there's a soul to her writing. It's hard to describe. There's good writers, and then there's some people you read that there's just something about it that it's like you're peeking into the person's soul, and it just feels, you just have every emotion imaginable reading it. And if you haven't read it, go check it out, rebelstorytellers.com. It's called Home Language, and it is, it's definitely worth reading for yourself.
Yep. So like we mentioned earlier, December's four-letter word is gift.
Gift.
G-I-F-T.
Yeah.
So we invited this guy who was hanging around in Rebel Pilgrim's offices to come sit down and chat with us.
Who's that?
His real name is Philip.
Is that true?
Yeah. His first name is Philip.
Really?
His middle name is Joseph.
Huh. What's his last name?
His last name is January's four-letter word, Boyd. B-O-Y-D.
Actually, Joe's tried to get us to use that for every.
Yeah.
And we thought that was a terrible idea.
Terrible.
Yeah. So we're going to talk to Joe a little bit, the three of us, about growing up and some of the gifts that we were pining for as children, some of the gifts that we got, some of our favorites. And we're also going to announce a little game we have going on this month in December around the four-letter word gift and how you can get involved and share your stories with us.
Indeed.
So that sounds fun.
Sounds super fun.
So why don't we stop talking about it and just play the clip?
Let's do it.
All right.
The Christmas gift that I remember wanting more than any other was a Commodore 64. This is going to be circa
1924.
80s, somewhere in the 80s. And we had Commodore 64s at my elementary school, and they were awesome. And we got to play a game called Zork. Did you guys ever play that game?
Was there aliens?
It was all words. So it was a role-playing game, and it would just say, you've entered an old house, there's a cabinet in the corner, and you could type anything you wanted. And it felt like magic because it could understand what you were saying at least 20% of the time. It was like it was prototype for Siri.
Ooh, zing.
So I asked for it, and I got, I think it was like $300 or $400, which was a lot of money back then, but I'm an only child and worth it. And what I didn't know was the disk drive was separate, and you had to have the disk drive to play Zork in any of the video games, and that was another $200. So I got the Commodore 64 and had to save up for a whole year. I collected Susan B. Anthony dollars. I remember that.
Wow. Yeah.
Did you have a Commodore 64, Brad?
No, I didn't. No, that was kind of before my age of awareness.
I'm much younger
than you guys.
Well, there we go. I remember getting the original Nintendo for Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
And also, I guess in the 80s, late 80s, early 90s, whenever that came out, I was probably 10, 11 years old. And it was amazing. It was a huge step up from the Commodore 64. And I got some games, and I would play...
Double Dribble?
Double Dribble was one of them. That was a good game. And I would just play all night. Like, I...
He's on fire!
Like, that's not Double Dribble.
What is that? That's NBA Jam.
NBA Jam. Double Dribble...
What would they say? They would say something.
He's
not on fire!
That's a penalty!
That's football.
That's a foul.
Wow. Do you guys watch any sports?
Yeah, right? Double Dribble. That's a foul? Penalty? What is it?
It's a foul in basketball.
Ah.
Penalty in football.
Tweet.
Tecmo Super Bowl. I was huge into stats. You guys might have already learned this about me by now, but I love stats, and they were the first two games ever that kept stats for you. And so I was obsessed with keeping stats. And so I would get Bo Jackson. I'd play the Raiders. And I would field a punt or a kick, and I'd run out of bounds at the one-yard line. Just so he could rush for 99 yards that possession. And I try to get him like 600-700 yards rushing. And this is what I would do for hours and hours at a time as a child.
Interesting fact about stats.
Yes.
Our listenership has gone down 12% since you started that story.
What are you talking about? People love
stat stories.
Nostalgia.
Yeah.
And statistics.
Well, my gift, I was a little lad growing up in Cleveland, Ohio with my little brother, Randy, and I wanted
a... Wait a second.
I wanted a BB gun, and I would tell my teacher about it, and she'd say, no, you're going to get in trouble, and I'd go tell Santa.
How long are you going to do this?
We didn't celebrate Christmas until I was 13 years old because we were so poor.
You didn't celebrate Christmas?
That's two lies. Two truths and a lie.
Are we playing that game all of a sudden?
My favorite gift as an adult, I love getting booze.
Now, that's the truth.
That is the truth.
That's my guess.
That was the truth. Like my brother-in-law, they get me like bottles of bourbon or scotch, and I love the labels, and I just love the whole drinking of them.
You love the labels? What's that mean?
I love going into a liquor store, and this sounds really bad, but I love the way the labels, like they're just so well designed and beautiful, and so getting them on Christmas is something I enjoy.
I think this is, we've said a lot about who we are through these gifts. So you are a designer.
Yep.
So you obviously.
Or an alcoholic.
I'm an alcoholic designer.
So you obviously love fonts.
Right.
I am a mathematician.
Yeah.
So I obviously love statistics.
Yep.
And Joe is a.
Only child.
Only child.
I would say, in all seriousness, what I loved about that Zork game was that you got to tell a story with the computer. I would venture to say I'm a storyteller. So
yeah.
I thought it was amazing there was this machine that could help you tell a story. And it was basically it was Dungeons & Dragons, but my parents didn't let me play Dungeons & Dragons, so they didn't know that. So I got to do that weird nerdy fantasy thing. Yeah. Not nerdy fantasy like Princess Leia's and Jabba the Hutt. Not that.
Cool stuff.
Fantasy like fantasy novel.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. No, I actually feel bad now because you're two actually is kind of cool, and I'm not really a mathematician, so mine's not cool.
But you obsess over meaningless things still, so that's good.
That is good. Thanks, Brad. I appreciate that. So part of the reason why we're telling our gift stories is because we'd like to hear your gift stories. We are running a little special feature all month on rebelstorytellers.com. Our four-letter word this month is gift. And we'd like you to share with us your gift stories. Was there a gift that you pined for as a youngster that you either did or did not get? Was there an awful gift that you've gotten over the years? Was there a wonderful gift that you've gotten over the years? If you email us, storytellers@rebelpilgrim.com, with your gift stories, we're going to choose one per week, our favorite, and you're going to win a gift. Joe, would you like to tell them what their fabulous gift is going to be?
It's Rebel Pilgrim swag. As much free stuff as we can gather in our office to send you. So several movies and a Gospel of John DVD.
A sticker.
We got stickers, a t-shirt.
A one-sided sticker.
I'm looking at Brad's bookshelf. I will pick out a book from his bookshelf and send you that.
Are we going to give him a Rebel Storytellers t-shirt?
Yeah, we're going to give him everything we got.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
that's a bag of swag.
Multiple movies, t-shirts, stickers,
will we read their story on the podcast?
Yeah, with our favorite one, we'll share on the podcast. We also might post it up on the blog. So come up with some good stuff. And now that Joe said all that, it actually is a really good gift. So we'll do one per week. So four gifts that we're going to give out. So keep sending stuff in, and if you don't win the first time, you might win weeks 2, 3, or 4.
So they email storytellers@rebelpilgrim.com.
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 That's it, exactly. And I guess we'll take these all the way up until like the 20th of December, so as long as you get it in for that last week of December.
Let's close this segment with Brad singing the jingle we wrote to help people remember the email.
Okay. Go ahead.
Come to our email address. It's storytellers@rebelpilgrim.com. It's so good, you'll email us twice. Dun, 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 dun.
Wow. I don't know how you come to an email address, but...
You go to your computer and the internet
This
device.
Is where you start pining for jazz music. Yes. Just a little instrumental jazz. Take me to the next section.
I feel like the jazz is already playing behind us at this point.
That's it for this week's podcast. We'll see you next time.
See ya.